It does, because it means absolutely nothing.
Well, yes.
Yeah.
And the cubs.
Ah, again, that was Mum and Dad not wanting me to be normal, that's the wrong term, but thinking I should have the opportunity to do everything other children do. Bearing in mind that I come from a family that, I mean, why they want me to do it is beyond me. We are not clubby people. We do not need outsiders to entertain us or to entertain. We're very much sort of insular people. But I joined the Cubs, and I think my sister, I'm not 100% sure about this, I think my sister was coerced to be Arcala or something, or Ricky Ticky, whatever they call them, just so they could, she could be there to look after me. And I went for a number of sessions, had the little uniform, learnt the Cub Scout law and all that business. Then it was time to go for the badges. And I remember to this day, I'm sitting, I think, on the floor, cleaning a man's shoe. Because this would teach me how to clean shoes in the future, even though I will never wear one. And I thought to myself, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, I must have been about 10.
Yeah.
And this is absolutely ridiculous. Plus, it was always held on a Thursday night, which I don't know if you remember, was Tomorrow's World night and Top of the Pop night. So I would miss both because it was pre-recording days. And I just said, no, I've had enough. I think the final straw was my little troop went on a camping trip, which was in a little village outside the town where I lived. And I couldn't go because I had to be cared for.
Yeah.
But my dad thought it'd be nice for a day visit to go and see it.
Mm.
Yeah, great. So I went down and all the little kids were in the tents, and I went in to see my mates who were in the tents, and it stunk of stale urine.
Mm.
Where all the little kids had peed themselves. I thought, yeah. I don't want this. This is not my life.
Yeah.
So I quickly pulled out of that.
Yeah.
And then another time, able-bodied people and their ideas is great. They set up a thalidomide disabled musical workshop in my town.
Mm-hmm.
That was another night out of my life, because I like watching telly. But no, I had to go down and join this musical workshop. And although I like music, I can't read it. I've got no idea, I've got no rhythm.
Yeah.
And now I would be on a glockenspiel. Why? I was quite happy to stay at home and watch telly. If you want him down, just push him.
I don't mind, as long as he doesn't turn. We don't want to record your paw, do we?
No. So that was another useless trip they try to get me on.
And so, how many local thalidomiders would you have had going to a musical workshop like that?
Back then, in the town and just outside, I think there was about probably six of us.
Right.
Yeah.
And people that you still see now that were...
One. One I still see, one I'm in contact through Facebook, and the others have disappeared. No idea.
Mm-hmm. And did your parents wanted you to go to something like that, to the musical thing, did they?
Not that they wanted me to, they thought it'd be an outlet for me.
Yeah.
Not realising that, you know, not my cup of tea.
No.
They just thought, they've given me the opportunity to do things, see if I liked it more than... They never forced me to do anything.
Mm. Oh, look, I've got a little friend.
Can't believe that.
Okay. No, I'm always happy. And so TV.
Mm.
You mentioned you like TV.
I do.
Favourite TV shows, just for the record?
At the moment, Doctor Who.
Oh.
Without doubt.
Me too.
It has been from the very first one I ever saw, which was the first episode of Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Did I tell you what William Hartnell wrote to me?
No.
Yeah, it was found out when I was at infants that I was a big Doctor Who fan. My teacher, I think he was a teacher, wrote to him and said, you know, this little thalidomide person, big fan of yours. So he wrote back, he sent me a model Dalek, and a photograph, a signed photograph of himself and a letter. I've still got all that.
Did you see Eva's picture with Matt Smith?
Who?
My daughter.
Really?
She met Matt Smith.
Jealous.
You have a look on, it's on my Facebook page.
Oh, go have a look at that.
It's cool. It's a cool picture as well. She won a... I might have it on my phone, or on my camera, if I've got my camera with me. She won a writing competition.
Right.
And it was at the for the, it was through school at the Royal Court Theatre in London, and it turns out he's a patron, so he came to meet all the kids who'd won the competition, and she had a photograph taken with him. She was so thrilled. They kept it secret till the last. She's a massive Doctor Who fan, you know, and of course Matt Smith is her era.
Yeah,
you know, because she wasn't crazy about the guy beforehand. I've forgotten his name now.
Tennant.
She didn't really like him very much. But she really likes Matt Smith.
Mm.
And we went along that evening and they said there's a mystery guest and, you know, who's going to come and give you your... We thought it was going to be David Walliams or somebody like that that writes kids' books. And then, you know, at a certain point, there was like her and there was, you know, there were five of them all her age in a little circle. And the woman said, we'll tell you who the mystery guest is now. Does anybody know who Matt Smith is? And you saw their faces and they were like, Doctor Who? You know, like, absolutely over the moon. And, you know, she was completely and utterly thrilled to bits, you know. And he was absolutely lovely.
Is he as zany as he is as the Doctor?
Really shy.
Really?
Really shy. But very good with the kids. You know, they were trying to get him to stand up and make a speech and he was just like really hiding behind his hair and going, no, I can't do this kind of thing. And he was standing at the back of the crowd. But the minute he had to talk to the kids, I don't know why I'm recording me saying all of this, but the minute he had to go and talk to the kids, he just totally, you know, just talked to them all one-on-one, really comfortable with the kids. Lovely man, absolutely, totally lovely. I was so impressed with him.
We are so sad here that my boys come and stay with us near enough every weekend, so we have Doctor Who weekend, which we all sit around watch it, and then we have to sing the theme tune when it starts and when it finishes. And last weekend my mum came and we made her do it as well. Well, the blokes do the dumby dum bit, and the women do the high pitch. Ooh, wee, ooh, that went. So we do that all week.
Yeah.
Or else
yeah.
they don't get to watch it.
No, Eva's mad about it, and she liked the Sarah Jane mysteries as well before that.
Oh, I never saw that.
They were really good. They were like Doctor Who for sort of 6-year-olds, basically. So still a little bit scary, actually, in places, some of them. But, I mean, Sarah Jane was a great Doctor Who sidekick.
Yeah, that's where I remember her from.
Yeah, yeah. Well, she was great as Sarah Jane as well. Yeah, those have always been popular.
Mm.
So is it mostly sci-fi stuff then?
I love sci-fi, and I like documentaries. I don't like reality. I can't stand reality TV. I think that's cheap exploitation. X Factor just makes me... my flesh crawl. Soap operas don't do anything for me. Love comedies. I would prefer to go and see a comedian in a theatre than I would a show. Not so much a show than a band. I do like going to the theatre to see shows. So that's my kind of TV.
Which comedians do you like?
You know, all of them. I see I mean, you get people who say, oh no, I don't like that, but there's always one with something that's there. So I literally like all the comedians.
And what about sitcoms as well? Do you like?
Yeah, I watch sitcoms. Not so much now because there's not a lot on, really.
There's not, is there? There's been that new one on, hasn't there? The one that everyone's getting insulted about. The one about the Muslim family. I can't think what it's called now. It's new. It's only been on twice.
Oh, right.
And it sort of really tries to send up the whole faith and like praying to Mecca and stuff.
Dangerous.
Everyone's got very, very offended by it. And
they haven't got a sense of humour, that one.
No.
Ah. I did watch the last week. They did a pilot, 2 episodes, of A Touch of Cloth on Sky One.
Don't know that one. I don't have Sky.
Ah, it was just like Naked Gun film.
Oh right.
A spoof, and that, but he's British, and that was hysterical. Love that. Mm. Yeah, so I like comedies, documentaries about the Second World War a lot.
Mm.
Much to the annoyance of my kids. Mm. And sci-fi.
Why the Second World War in particular? Is it because of your dad, do you think? Or?
Partly my dad, partly my mum also. My mum would tell stories of the social aspect of the war, and basically I just want to find out if they're right. Details, if they're right.
Mm.
And it's not just about the battles, that doesn't really do a lot for me. It's the social aspect of it. Mm. How did people feel? How many lies were told by the government or governments? How did things like, from your own history, like at what stage did the Jewish people realise that they were going away and they weren't coming back?
Mm.
You know, some of them must have said at some point. And the media doesn't really cover that. They've just got this bland thing. Mm. Whereas if you watch the documentaries, there were pockets of resistance with the Jewish people.
Mm.
But it's not ever publicised unless you look into it.
Mm.
Because it, to me, it didn't sound logical. Mm. You know, you see your neighbours disappearing, not coming back. Mm. You've got to go, something's happened.
I think that quite a lot of people thought that they were being made to leave the country. Deported, basically.
Mm.
I think that's what they thought was happening, and they thought that was bad enough.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, they
yeah.
were all being sent to train stations, and there was, you know, they were all being forced across the borders and things like that.
Mm.
But I don't think that, from what I know from my research and my work, I don't think that many people thought they were going to be executed. I think some of them thought they might be put in like prisoner, camps, kept as sort of prisoners of war, if you like.
Yeah.
But I don't think there was any idea. I don't think even amongst a lot of the German people, they knew exactly what was being done. I think the people that were living out in the countryside, quite close to these camps, when they saw this,
smelling it,
exactly,
yeah.
must have known and must have yeah. leaked those stories back.
Yeah,
how could they not? Yeah. But I think there was still, you know, a massive amount of shock when it was realised the extent to what happened. Well, it's surreal, isn't it?
Yeah. Right. It's only you understand it now because it's happened, I should imagine, at the time.
Mm.
It's just...
Mm.
Yeah, not heard of before. Unreal.
Mm.
Totally unreal.
Mm.
But that's the type of thing I like looking into. Not, as I say, not so much the battles, because that's well documented.
Mm.
But it's stuff that isn't documented I like.
Mm. Mm. So the sort of the human or social side of it. Yeah.
And again, why the government's lied and this stupidity thing that we put down, the propaganda that everyone in London was pulling together.
Yeah.
And then you watch documentaries where the rich, while during an air raid, would go into the basement of the Savoy and be able to eat food that no one could even touch because there was a two-tier system.
Mm.
They didn't all pull together.
Mm.
Putting it into reality about the black market.
Mm.
One person's gain from the black market is somebody else's theft.
Mm. Mm.
And, you know, putting the reality into it, not the chirpy cockneys as they try to make it out to be.
Mm. Mm.
I just like the reality of it.
Yeah,
of
yeah,
all that.
Yeah. And some of that, your interest in that, in the sort of the government's lying, must be related to the, you know, the thalidomide story with the, you know, all of that sort of big cover-up
going on. Payoffs and...
Yeah.
And if not with money, then with... it's like in the first court case that we had back in the mid-60s, it was an obvious payoff to the judge being promoted. So we had the whole case... had to be heard again.
Mm.
I mean, looking back, it's more than obvious.
Mm.
So I like all stuff like that.
Mm. That makes sense. And now you've talked about a hazardous connection with cars.
Ah, yeah. Well, I was talking to my, again, my mum on Saturday, and then it slowly dawned on me that I have this real bad luck with vehicles. And it started off with Lady Hall, who helped found the Thalidomide Society. She came from another children's organisation over to ours. Brilliant woman, really tried. Back then we didn't have electric wheelchairs. So through her insight and her connections, she managed to get a pedal car for me, a yellow TR7 Triumph pedal car, which is lovely. And then I couldn't pedal it, so she got somebody to motorise it for me. And it was absolutely brilliant. And it was so I could literally go out into the street and play with all the kids in the street, which I did do. And I remember I was out with my dad one day, and we were coming down this fairly steep hill called Cutty's Lane, which, I mean, when you say lane, it conjures up this pretty little lane, but it wasn't, it was in town. And halfway down this hill, my brakes went, and I was literally hurtling down this hill, which was going to open up into a T-junction on the road. And I remember my dad chasing after me, and he stopped me. I was feet away from the end. And that was my first experience with brakes going in cars. And then around about, I should imagine, 15 years later, down Cutty's Hill again, down Cutty's Lane again, I did it in a real car, which was a DAF, also yellow, and again my brakes went, and that's when I ended up hitting the tree and doing my eye.
Yeah.
And in between time, I had another bespoke car that was made for a lot of us beneficiaries. I call it bespoke because it literally was a one-off, even though we had, for a lot of us, no other disability group had this thing. Which I remember playing with the kids, and I was reversing on a little slope and turned it over, and all the battery acid came out. So that was ruined. Then I did have another one that I was successful with. I kept it all the way through till I grew out of it and passed it on to somebody else.
Not yellow.
That was yellow, actually. That was yellow. Yellow seems to be the thing.
Yeah.
And then I've had a nasty one on the motorway. I was driving my van, and I was going up north to a meeting. And for some reason, I didn't know it, but my handbrake's electronic. And in those days, it was just a flick up for on, flick down for off. And then it would just stay in the middle. You didn't know if it was on. And I was driving up the motorway with it on. And of course, I burnt out my brake discs, which I found out because I was in the middle lane and this lorry pulled out in front of me to overtake a lorry in front of him. I went to put my foot on the brake and nothing. And absolutely nothing. So I've turned to my then wife sitting next to me and I've gone, I won't say all the words, but oh dear, my brakes aren't working. I think I'm going to hit the lorry in front.
Yeah.
And she shouted back, oh dear, that sounds dangerous. And I said, yes, I think it could well be. And my mum and dad were in the back, so we were coming to the same meeting. And they heard us saying this rather loudly, thinking that we were having an argument. And my dad said, no, it's my mum said, what are you arguing about? And my then wife said, we're not arguing, the brakes have gone. And my dad, that was his job, he was a driver all his life, came running up to the front, and between the two of us, we managed to pull the gears down, get onto the hard shoulder, and survived it.
Wow.
And then my latest one, which was a year and a half ago, Volkswagen van. I'm having a bit of trouble with the brakes, nothing seriously, so I took it into a garage. And they looked over it, they said, nothing really wrong with it. We cleaned up the pads and all that lot, brought it back to me that evening. I took it out because we were going to see we were going to a show in town, and we got around two corners and the brakes literally went, and I drove it over the top of a raised roundabout and into a barrier, and I said to Claire, "Oh my God, I think we're dead." And fortunately enough, I hit the barrier and it threw me out into the middle of the road, and then the wheel came off and we all stopped. And that was because the garage had forgot to link up my disabled brake.
Wow. That's so dangerous a thing to do.
Mm.
So that's 5 car accidents.
Mm.
That's quite a lot.
Yeah.
I just had my first one ever.
Oh, you're an amateur.
Exactly.
Oh, I did have another one. Did have another, but that was really, that one was my fault. I'd gone to a, this was in the days when they didn't have drink driving, by the way.
Okay.
I'd gone out with my mate and his girlfriend in my DAF. And we'd gone to this pub where they had a very steep car park. Narrow and steep. And I thought, being clever, I'd park it at the top of the hill, so when coming out, I could just drive down and onto the main road, rather than getting in all these little bays where people could block me in. Went in the pub, did have a couple of drinks, but it wasn't that bad. Came out, I got into the car, his girlfriend got into the back of the car. I'd previously done an old trick my dad taught me of putting a brick under the wheel in case it rolled, because it was that steep. So anyway, I said to my mate, "I'll start the engine," which then gave me powers to brakes. "You take the brick away." He said yes, and forgot to wait for me to start the engine. So he took the brick away. I've started to roll down the hill. Absolutely no steering. Oh no, I did have steering, because it wasn't powered back then. It wasn't powered. I had steering but no brakes.
Yeah.
Or accelerator. So I rolled down. He'd left the door open to just pop back in again after he removed the brick. And that door got closed on a van that was parked. Got to the bottom of the hill, which opened up into a mini roundabout, which I went round the wrong way. Got tooted at quite a bit. Got onto the other side of the roundabout, at which time it was rolling to a stop. Started the engine. My mate had come running down the hill. He jumped in and we shot off. And that was it.
So basically you've kind of like diced with death.
Oh,
quite a lot of these
things,
many
occasions. I have this deep theory that I don't think I'm going to ever die.
Do you think you're indestructible, Ed?
I really seriously do. I really do. I've been in so many scrapes and stuff that it's like when I went to have my eye done, they done the blood pressure and everything, and when they done it, they said, you're seriously weird. And I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "Well, your blood pressure, everything is totally normal." He said, "Normally when people go for an operation, they're worried that they're not going to come out and all that." He said, "You're totally normal." So I just really don't worry about it.
No. How about things like doing things like taking blood pressure from you? Is that difficult to do?
Very
difficult. Sort of the cuff. How do they do that?
They do it on my leg.
Right.
They put the cuff around there.
Mm.
It's more of an idea as to how accurate it is.
Mm. Mm.
So they do it like that. Blood tests themselves are awkward because my veins are very small.
Yeah.
But, you know, you sit there for about a half an hour and digging away and they finally get a drop of blood. But I'm really, really lucky and I really... Well, to be honest, I know it's wrong, but since living here, and he's come out for 6 years, I still haven't got a GP.
Really?
I keep getting round to it. I keep meaning to get round to it, but I never do.
But that's a good sign that you don't. So even with things like coughs and colds and things, you don't tend to need to go.
I know it's probably wrong, but I have a bit of a low opinion about GPs.
Mm.
Is that all they are is... little bit witch doctory. You know, you're going with Evelyn, they'll give you a tablet. Mm. If I want anything like that, I can go into Boots. Mm. So I keep away from them, they keep away from me. Mm. Hello. And that's it, really.
You're very lucky.
Mm. I mean, up against other thalidomiders, it's, you know, I'm incredibly lucky. That's just gone down on the book now. Wave to Catherine.
Waved.
Be recorded. Yeah, so that's it, really. I just keep away from them.
You're lucky. Well, I have to go quite a lot because of Eva has this allergy problems.
Oh, yeah,
yeah. Anaphylactic, so... Yeah. I've been back and forth a lot with her.
Yeah, well, that's a genuine thing. I think I find a lot of people go to doctors just to have someone to chat to.
I don't get it. People go if they've got things like, you know, they'll go with like an earache, and I'm like, what's the point? All they'll do is tell you to take paracetamol, and, you know.
Yeah. I've got a cold.
It starts bleeding or something.
Yeah.
I've finished all of my questions that I had to ask you, but is there anything else that you would like to say or anything else you think didn't get covered? Should we pause for a second?
Yeah, Claire enters the room. Yeah, sure.
So any last thoughts or comments, Ed?
Yeah, a bit off the wall. A bit, not really to do with anything. But it's a way I describe myself. I don't know if I've said this to you before. The only equivalent I can give to you is because I've been brought up in a normal home and a normal schooling all my life, but I am disabled myself, and therefore I am limited to what I can do and, you know, access to places and everything. I describe myself almost as mixed race, whereas I'm half able-bodied mentally, but half disabled physically, and so I'm in a bit of a limbo land where I can mix with either worlds relatively comfortably, but don't but also where I'm lost in various worlds as well, because I'm not fully disabled in since, you know, the upbringing and everything. There's some bits that I don't understand. And there's other things that able-bodied people don't understand about me due to the disability. So I always describe myself as sort of being mixed race in that respect. And I think probably a lot of people who have been in my situation probably would be like that. That they're not, they're at home in both worlds, but not in both worlds, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? So you're kind of a category of your own, in a way.
Yeah.
Like neither absolutely one thing or the other.
No.
Somebody I interviewed said to me, and I thought this was, I wonder what you think about this, that one of the differences between being affected by thalidomide and belonging to a different disability group is almost because of that, because you're, I don't really know how to put it, but other disability groups are so defined in terms of, you know, a cerebral palsy sufferer will have a specific kind of life, whereas people affected by thalidomide, for one thing, you're all very different to each other in terms of how much you're affected and in what ways. But you've also not been born into that same kind of known medical condition.
Yeah, that's right.
So it is like a different category somehow.
Yeah, I suppose in that sense it is, because we're not predefined.
No.
There's no history with us.
Mm.
And so I think the medical profession and psychologists and sociologists, whatever you want, are learning at the same rate as we are. Because in that respect, we are quite unique.
As an oral history project, it's perfect, because you're like a perfect sample group of people, because it's a small group, really. you have these two absolute things in common, which is being born within this period, same period of time, so you're all the same age,
yeah,
roughly, and all of you had the thing in your lives that your mother took